You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, November the 9th, and it's time for our regular Friday Week in Review, when we welcome in two guests from different perspectives to talk with you about the big political news stories of the week. And we will talk about the new U.S. Attorney General confirmed last night, talk about oil prices looming near $100 a barrel, talk about the latest from the presidential campaign trail and the latest in Pakistan, and from our state legislature. We have a new video competition act that passed yesterday. We'll talk about this and more during the Week in Review, plus anything you want to bring up at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are happy to have with us as our two Week in Reviewers, Owen Robinson, conservative blogger for bootsandsabers.com. He's also a columnist for the West Bend Daily News. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And with us in studio, Peg Lautenschlager, former attorney general of the state of Wisconsin, now in private practice with the law firm Lawton & Cates. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning.
Well, we'll start with former federal judge Michael Mukasey has been confirmed as the nation's 81st attorney general. The Senate confirmed Mukasey last night to replace Alberto Gonzalez. Mukasey's confirmation did not come easily. He ran into sharp opposition after he refused to say whether waterboarding was torture. Republicans were solidly behind President Bush's nominee. Democrats said their votes were not so much for Mukasey as they were for restoring a leader to a Justice Department left adrift after Gonzalez's resignation in September. Our two U.S. senators in Wisconsin, Cole and Feingold, against this nomination, largely because Mukasey would not say waterboarding was torture. What do you think of all this, Peg Lautenschlager?
Well, I think, there are those who want to trivialize the waterboarding thing, saying this is kind of a paint-the-guy-into-a-box sort of situation. But I think what it is largely symbolic of the concerns that so many folks who have gone to the Justice Department, the U.S. Justice Department in this Bush administration, have historically been solid conservatives who are viewed as bureaucrats and people who were respected kind of for their lifetime commitments to the process and the institution. And yet somehow when they have risen to the level of being in the administration as such and being part of that Bush administration, then they all had to kind of take the blood loyalty oath and make certain they foster the president's agenda. And I think this was sort of a key question for many Democrats in that they saw it as a way in which they could say, hey, are you going to be tough enough to say no when you have to? And I think in that way, Mukasey didn't come through.
Mm-hmm. Owen?
Well, I agree with Peg that it certainly was symbolic. There wasn't a lot of substance. It was a wonderful show of political theater. But it's interesting that, you know, Bush really went through great lengths to find a candidate for that job that he thought that both sides of the aisle could support. Went out and found a moderate, and when Mukasey, when his appointment was first announced, people on both sides of the aisles were saying what a good thing it was and how they thought he would sail through. But sure enough, they found something to grab onto so they could talk about it for a week. And at the end, the result is the same. He's now our attorney general.
You know, and it's interesting, though. My experiences during the Clinton Justice Department gave me opportunity to work with both Bob Mueller and Chertoff, who were U.S. attorneys, overlap U.S. attorneys, and actually Bob Mueller, a U.S. attorney during Clinton. And I saw in those two guys examples of Mueller, who I think for the most part has while he is a conservative and has run the FBI separate from the political concerns of the White House, whereas I see Chertoff as being somebody who has sort of totally caved into his institutional commitment in order to toe the company line. Now, his position's a bit different than is Mueller's. But on the other hand, I think that's the sort of thing Democrats are concerned about, is will you answer the hard question the right way when you get to it, or are you gonna simply, you know, blindly follow the demands of the Bush administration? And I don't think he rose to the occasion.
I'm not sure, because the Democrats weren't really asking him whether he would make the hard choice when the time came. They were asking him to make that hard choice before he was confirmed and prior to him being briefed on the actual details of the program that they're discussing here. Keep in mind, at this point, he's a private citizen. Well, not anymore. He was at the time. And he didn't know the details of waterboarding, how it was used, when it was used, if it was used in any great extent. And he didn't know the details, yet he was being asked to make judgments on that program prior to being confirmed. And I really think that was overreaching.
Well, then I think his answer should have been, you know, I really don't know that much about waterboarding, but I can imagine it might be appropriate in some times because I need to find out the details. I think there's some of us, there's a much easier answer, which is this sounds like a gruesome sort of practice and just say no, you know?
Yeah.
What about, Peg, Democrats saying that, well, he's better than a leaderless attorney general's office having this guy there.
I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, you see that in U.S. attorney's offices when there's a change in administration and the former U.S. attorneys leave and resign and new U.S. attorneys come in. There is a certain ability on the part of a presidential appointee to lead and direct and take that leadership role and that ownership of responsibility. That I think sometimes those who are serving the institution don't necessarily have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, this is a state issue, but it's got the legal tie-in. An appeals court yesterday ruled that Scott Jensen, former Assembly Speaker Scott Jensen, should get a new trial, saying that his convictions on these charges involving using state workers to campaign on state time. He should be retried so he can he should be able to present evidence that other state leaders did this as well. So everybody else was doing it. I should have been able to do it too. What did you make of that decision yesterday, Peg Launschlager?
I thought it was very odd. You know, I mean, if you put it in other criminal contexts, you know, so everybody's dealing cocaine somewhere. Does this mean it's okay? I thought that was the strangest thing when it came to, you know, kind of an expectation of good government. And I think the real tragedy from the decision is that there is this notion, and we saw it in the Georgia Thompson case, too, that rewarding your friends once you obtain power is acceptable practice. And I think that's a tragic thing to have happen in a democracy.
Yeah. Owen?
Well, the issue that was in contention there appears to be the judge's instructions to the jury, where essentially the jury was instructed that if they found that Jensen did indeed commit the act, that the intent was assumed to be there, when by the law the intent has to be there for him to be convicted. So they should have considered that as a separate question as to whether the act itself was committed. So,
well, and I agree with you on that, Owen. I think that the court really should have looked at that. I mean, we have so many times now in criminal law where there's an implicit intent or where we now have passed laws involving reckless conduct that rise to the level of criminality, that sort of thing. But, you know, and keeping a remens rea component in jury instructions, I think, is an important one. But the thing about the testimony, everybody else was doing it, so why can't I, kind of thing, that really boggled my mind. I don't know what you think.
Well, I think that it's, you know, the ability for him to be able to offer that defense, whether the jury would buy it or not is an entirely separate question, but for him to be able to get up and at least make the argument, I think he should have been allowed to do. But I think what's more interesting at this point is what's going to happen now,
uh-huh.
Whether the Attorney General is going to appeal this through the state Supreme Court, where it seems that the appeals court's ruling, because of the way it was overturned, it's likely to be upheld in the Supreme Court, but it would be a quicker resolution to it, and they could be overturned. But whether the Attorney General is going to do that and draw it out, or whether Jensen's just going to take it back for another trial and see what happens, but keep in mind, this will be in the political debate next year during the election cycle.
This attorney general has been very risk averse when it comes to taking on some of the tough issues. So I think it's going to be a difficult decision that's going to be made there.
Yeah. Well, you don't have a prediction, Peg Landeschlager?
No, I don't.
Well, Owen, I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
I don't really have a prediction either. If it were me, if I were the Attorney General, which will never happen, I would probably not appeal it and just go ahead and go back to trial.
Yeah. And there's the one decision. I do think that the Supreme Court would move rather expeditiously on making a decision. But the longer you wait, the older the testimony gets. And, I think from a litigator standpoint, that's going to be an issue.
Yeah, well, what implications will this have on the elections next year if this is in the headlines next year, Owen?
Well, what you're going to hear in news story after news story is Republican, former speaker, felony conviction trial. Felony trial. And those things will saturate the mindset in an election cycle where it's already predicted to be a Democrat year. That'll just help lend to that, I believe.
Well, and I think, in an ideal world, and maybe I'm just too much of an optimist, it would bring forth this notion that maybe we ought to be talking about some kind of meaningful campaign finance reform. I think we are out of the barn and way far away, and closing the door now is probably too late. But, tragically, we had a pretty clean government here in Wisconsin until a couple decades ago, and we've seen things go downhill in tragic kinds of ways.
We are talking with Peg Lautenschlager, former Attorney General for Wisconsin, now in private practice with the law firm Lawton & Cates, and Owen Robinson, a blogger for bootsandsabers.com, also a columnist for the West Bend Daily News, are two guests today for this Friday's edition of The Week in Review. 1-800-642-1234 if you'd like to join in to talk about an issue in the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine with a very stuffy nose, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to The Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, along with my guest Owen Robinson and Peg Lautenschlager. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins, and after 4, it's your time for your views on the news. Ben's guest will be UW-Milwaukee Professor Mordecai Lee, and they'll talk about the news issues of the week as well. You can call in with the news story that got your attention after 4. We are reviewing the news of the week, and we will let Linda in Monroe bring up the next subject. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, guests. The cable TV prices have been going through the roof, and all we've been getting is less of service and more ads. Now, I understand the Bill Moyers crew was in Madison to film the Senate debate. And since I think the whole thing was rushed through without much public impact from the public, I believe that the end results will be just that the whole situation will just get worse, because I personally support Senator Erpenbach's view, and I would hope that I'd like to see the governor veto it.
Yeah, we heard this in state news. AT&T would be able to more easily compete in Wisconsin under this bill that passed the state Senate yesterday. The proposal would do away with local franchise agreements for offering cable TV services. Instead, a single statewide license would be issued. It opens the door for companies like AT&T to more easily and more quickly serve large parts of Wisconsin. Opponents argue the bill will not increase competition or lower cable rates as promised. Governor Doyle has generally supported the bill. Owen Robinson, what's your opinion of this bill that passed yesterday?
Well, I think it's an interesting lesson in how sometimes we set up a system that's right for the time, perhaps, but after decades of changes in technology and government and all sorts of things, that there's this knee-jerk reaction where people want to hold on to that old system because they got benefit out of it. The main resistance to this bill came from local units of government who had these cable contracts that they got money from, that they got their municipal shows on TV, they got free cable for their office buildings and all these things that they like to have. And by making it a statewide thing, they were afraid that they're no longer going to have those benefits of these local things. I personally think at this point, more competition is always better in the marketplace. Cable companies were granted monopolies in local municipalities because of the cost of laying in that infrastructure. Well, now you can have satellite, you can have cable, you can, you know, there's all, and of those, there's several different things. UVerse, which is AT&T's fiber television product that they're looking to offer, is just another form of getting the same content. So the more options that consumers have to choose between these different ways, the better. It'll help bring down prices and increase choices.
You know, I may be a liberal, Owen, but I think I'm a Luddite, too. And for me, I just don't see where the choice is going to come. The choice will come for those consumers who have and take the time to shop around, to figure it out, to play the schemes, to do whatever. But for the average citizen, I think that this bill doesn't do much. And to pretend that this is going to be competition, I think, is a farce. I mean, AT&T essentially bought its way to get a legislative fix so it could expand its business and become an even bigger 800-pound gorilla. And, you know, and I think when the day is done and the campaign finance reports come out, you're going to see that an awful lot of money got dumped into legislative races with incumbents simply so AT&T could get its desired result.
I suspect you're right about the campaign finance, but to suggest that consumers are somehow not capable of going out and shopping these things, I think is a bit insulting to the consumers. We go to grocery stores and buy clothes and shop things, and believe me, when it comes down to people figuring out where they get the most sports package for the least money, they will shop that till they drop.
But you know, like when we do that, we send my 16-year-old in, whether it's our cell phones or whatever. When I was in law school, which is some time ago now, I took a course called Regulated Industries, and we used to actually regulate some of the industries where we had necessary services. And since we've deregulated them, I don't think we've seen prices go down, whether it be in absolute dollars, in adjusted dollars, or in percentage of our incomes that we use for these services, even though theoretically we're technologically more advanced and things are provided to us more expeditiously.
Well, I think you bring up a great example with cell phones. Cell phones has all kinds of competition out there, and there you can now go out and get a cell phone for free.
Oh, absolutely. And then you pay for this service charge or that service charge, and before you know it, they have it. I mean, I found out that the last 3 months of my cell phone bill, and we have a family package, had text messages on it, but even though we had the text message packet. And then you think, you know, how many consumers are out there who don't have those options or don't know about those options? And I think about older adults and how they're already victimized by consumer fraud. Now they got all these things they have to go through and figure out in dealing with technologies which weren't even thought of, much less existed when they were younger or even middle-aged.
Well, back to the cable bill, how does, in the current environment, you get your cable bill, it has all sorts of fees on there, the prices go up, how does the cable, allowing AT&T to offer a competing service in the same market, how does that make that worse?
Well, my sense is what happens with these things is that one person gets one company gets one thing, another gets another, and pretty soon you are in a position where you end up with despite logic of economics, kind of an upward spiral rather than a downward spiral. And we've seen that in a number of markets.
I'll get one more call in on this issue, and then we need to move on to other issues in the news this week. Tom in Little Suamico, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My comment is, I was listening to the professor talk about this last week on Wisconsin Public Radio, and his big comment was, and they had a guy come in, I think it's from North Shore or the northern suburbs of Milwaukee, and he said he had this great, they're doing it there already, and he's getting his 10 NFL channels, and he's all happy with it. But the problem that we're seeing is it will not be put into the inner city Milwaukee because there isn't the amount of money that those people, it's socioeconomic demographics that would prohibit that. They're going to cherry pick the most lucrative markets and then discriminate against the less lucrative markets. And he said eventually in a couple of years it's all going to come out and there's going to be no competition anyhow.
Yeah, he's just referring to Barry Orton, a UW-Madison telecommunications a professor who was on a previous program.
Well, and I think that's a good question for us to decide in government. And Owen and I have fundamentally opposite viewpoints on this, but I think there are certain things which are sort of services which we as a people use, and whether or not it's appropriate for government to ensure that there's at least a semblance of equity in terms of availability and the like is something which we need to consider societally.
Well, but yeah, you're you're right. We do come from different viewpoints on that. I'm not one that believes that television access is some sort of right that we need to guarantee to everybody. And in the inner city today, they still have options. They have cable, they have satellite, they have over-the-air. And to the notion that they might possibly, AT&T might possibly not put it in there, so therefore we should oppose another form of getting media, is a little absurd. I mean, frankly, even in the inner city, most households have some sort of entertainment, have cable or have something. There's a market there, and as we all know, when it comes to AT&T, if there's a market where they can go make money, they will go make money.
Let me move on to another issue. Brings in a lot of economic issues. The consumer confidence number came out today. It shows that the consumer confidence in the U.S. has fallen to its lowest level since Hurricane Katrina struck in 2005. The latest poll finds consumer confidence shaken by renewed market turbulence, stock market turbulence, the continued housing slump by oil prices that are getting close to $100 a barrel, and people are also worried about the decline in the value of the dollar. One economist calling it a perfect storm of negative factors affecting consumers. So how's your consumer confidence, Peg Lohenschlager?
Mine isn't high, and I'll tell you, and I think you can add a number of other factors to that. You see that the upper tier of income earners in the United States, is the difference between their incomes and those of the poor is getting greater and greater. We have a further disparity than we have at any time since the Great Depression, and now we've even surpassed that. There are issues like oil and energy resources where we have deregulated those markets in a way that they aren't even on the stock market anymore. We see private equity firms coming in and purchasing things like some of the largest nursing home chains in the country, and doing so in order to maximize profits while not looking at quality of care. I think all of these things are going to come back to bite us at some point. And, you know, it's kind of that the old thing with the frog that goes into the boiling water and realizes that it needs to jump out versus the one where the water's gradually heated up and it doesn't realize it's boiling to death. And I think we've got a lot of issues like that out there. And, you know, and then we haven't even touched on the environment, which is a whole other area where I think we've got to start paying attention. So at some point, we've got to do something about this and recognize that, you know, it isn't working the way it is now.
Owen?
I agree with Peg. We need to completely throw capitalism out the door and go with a regulated economy, because that's proven very successful in some countries. I'm completely kidding.
Yeah, sarcasm's dangerous, Owen.
Yeah, somebody probably recorded that. You know, consumer confidence is always, it's the impression of the American people of how the economy is performing. Much of that is driven not only by personal experience, but also by what they see on the news, what they see in the media. It's always interesting that, you know, especially over the past few years where there's been this drumbeat of a bad economy and everybody's worried, even though the economy, the numbers have been fantastic, that people, consumer confidence was still a little low, where, because people were thinking, you know, that they would look at their own lives and say, I'm doing great, but my neighbors must not be because I see this on the news.
You know,
the biggest news we have in the economy right now, beyond the housing market, beyond those smaller blips, is the weakening dollar. That's the big one out there that could really, really damage the economy. And if the Federal Reserve continues to overreact to the housing correction that's taking place right now by lowering interest rates, they will continue to drive that dollar low.
You know, Owen, though, you look at the subprime lending thing and the like. Look at the payday lenders and some of these people. In Wisconsin, we used to have caps on interest rates, and then we eliminated those caps. The mayor of Superior, who is a very, very conservative man, when I was attorney general, would send me copies of contracts from the payday loan folks where people were paying 1,800% interest. And we were finding, you know, and the state legislature found nothing wrong with that. You know, that isn't helping the economy. That's getting the poor to go poor. It's not helping somebody get out of a financial crisis. It's creating an even greater one. And it's all about greed.
Well,
and, you know, and At some point, you know, those regulations were in place in the 50s, they were in place in the 60s, they were in place in the 70s, and you know what, and the state was doing well. I don't see where we've gotten any better off by doing things like taking off interest caps and so-called leaving it to the free market when it comes to everything, because what that means is the greedy get greedier and the folks who are fat get fatter, and we've got to have some modicum of decency in terms of recognizing we all have to live on this planet together.
The problem with the subprime lending had nothing to do with interest rates. It had to do with lenders were extending loans to people at virtually no cost for 100% value of the houses, so people were buying houses that they could not afford. And at that point, they don't. The advantage of that is home ownership in America is higher than it has ever been. And right now, the foreclosure rate's still only at about 3%, and most of those people who are being foreclosed on are people who bought investment property and people who, frankly, they have no value in their house. They put nothing down to buy it 3 years ago. They've got, you know, 2% equity in it. They're out of house, but they're not out a lot of money.
And it causes people, though, you look at the bankruptcy numbers that were up, and our solution to that was to make it more difficult to file for bankruptcy. I mean, it seems to me as though if we would have put some strings, you know, attach some strings in the beginning so that people who couldn't afford things weren't given the opportunity to get them. My goodness, my 16-year-old daughter gets credit card applications all the time, and they'll give her $300 up front without any guarantee of anything. And, you know, we're seeing that with college kids. We're seeing that with the poor. We're seeing that with senior citizens now. And at some point, we have to realize that, we can't keep making money off of other people for nothing.
But the market is already correcting, where companies like Citigroup and that hold many of these mortgages that were given out that are now going into foreclosure, those are the people, you know, that they're being punished by the market because they made a bad choice. They extended poor, bad loans to people who couldn't afford it, and now they're learning their lesson.
And why did they do it? To make easy money fast, you know?
Exactly.
They weren't patient enough.
Speaking of money, the $100 a barrel oil prices, or near $100 oil prices this week will, you know, raise prices at the pump, and some people are going to have a hard, cold winter. But besides those immediate economic effects, will this lead, do you think, Peg, to any changes when it comes to energy policy?
Well, you know, the Congress has been looking at a number of things. In the 90s, they deregulated the markets on all energy commodities. And in doing so, about 80% of the energy commodities that were traded in things like natural gas, fuel oil, and the like, ended up being traded under the counter, as they call it. So there is no transparency in the process. So if you buy, say, pork bellies, or if you buy oranges or whatever else is on the commodity market, that's always a public transaction when the trading is done, just as it is in a traditional stock market situation. But what we did with the energy markets was to say you don't need to do the public trading, you don't need to be on the commodities market. And what most economists believe is that with that has come a ratcheting up of energy prices, because whenever there is a fear of some sort of cutback or a fear of a problem, whether it be Katrina or an oil spill or whatever, it drives that under-the-counter trading up in a way which ups the prices on the non-commodity but commodity trading market. And then those sorts of things impact the prices in ways that otherwise wouldn't happen.
To answer the original question, yes, of course the Congress is going to look at energy policy, because they always do. But the important thing to remember about with oil prices is that oil and energy is a world commodity. What we do in America has a limited effect on the market forces at work there. For instance, just this past, just recently, the largest company in the world is now PetroChina, the oil company in China. And China is now the second largest consumer of petroleum on the planet. And that continues to rise as their economy is ramping up. And as we see India and some of the African countries begin to develop and buy cars and use energy, we are going to continue to see energy prices go up because that's what happens when more people demand energy. So we do need to make sure that that we have a good, sensible energy policy here in America. I would suggest that we should start by allowing ourselves to actually go out and get our own energy instead of buying it as much on the world market, where we can go and drill in our own waters and mine for our own coal and go ahead and bring up energy and let us use the natural resources that we have.
I thought you were the conservative, Owen. We're just going to spend it all now? Is that how it goes?
Use up that
energy, because we'll figure out something else later on down the line. I think we ought to be looking at things like light rail. I was in Milwaukee yesterday and came home. The traffic was outrageous, and now we're even building highways that are parallel to one another to get the traffic moving. We aren't looking at wind. We're not looking at solar. We're not doing anything that way in terms of giving businesses incentive to look at those kinds of things.
That's just not true. There's actually a large wind farm they're trying to put up near the Horican Marsh that's being opposed by environmentalists because of bird kill.
Right.
But, I agree with you that we need a diversified energy portfolio, but it's not something that you can force in. It's something that as oil prices rise, there is a natural... there's a market force there to go out and find alternative forms of energy. And right now, frankly, our economy is based on oil, like it or not. So if you talk about pulling some sort of radical change instead of allowing the market just to evolve with time over that, what you're going to do is kill the economy, and then we have kids starving in the street. So is that really something we want?
Oh, and we have kids starving in the street. They're just, some people aren't willing to look at that.
Yeah. We're going to have to hold this discussion here as we take a short pause and continue talking about the news of the week. Our two Week in Reviewers this week, Peg Lautenschlager, former Attorney General of the state of Wisconsin, and Owen Robinson, blogger for BootsAndSabers.com. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up, John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn, talking about the FCC public hearing today on media ownership rules. John talking with Professor Bob McChesney coming up after 9 o'clock. We are talking with Owen Robinson and Peg Lautenschlager during this Friday Week in Review program. I'm Joy Cardine, and I apologize for my stuffy voice. I have a cold, and I hope I'll get over to, over the weekend. Let's talk a little bit about presidential politics. News from the campaign trail includes Rudy Giuliani, Republican candidate, picking up a key endorsement this week from televangelist Pat Robertson. A little bit surprised by that, because Rudy Giuliani has relatively pro-choice views that would, you'd think, be the opposite of Robertson's. Owen Robinson, did that surprise you?
Yeah, it's a bit surprising. I think that Pat Robertson is just out ahead of the curve a little bit, doing what many conservative, particularly social conservatives, are probably thinking about, and it's, do you bite the bullet and swallow a candidate that you fundamentally disagree with because that candidate is marginally better than the one who's likely to be on the other side of the aisle? It's a calculated decision. I personally don't agree with it, but to each his own.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting to me, because it seems as though some of those, you know, life values that the conservatives so tout, the social conservatives, really Giuliani, embodies the antithesis of it. And it, to see people kind of jump in ship with the classic conservatives and the Christian right and hopping on this bandwagon, I think speaks volumes as to the courage of the convictions of the folks on the far right.
Dave, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think it also speaks to, you know, oftentimes in political rhetoric, we try to classify people as, you know, abortion voters or, you know, religious voters or whatever. But it does bring to light the fact that we are all much more complicated than that. I personally, there are dozens of issues I care about, and as I look at a candidate, I measure them against all of those various issues and try to come to some determination. There are very few voters who are actually binary single-issue voters, even if they're characterized.
Well, so all of the flack that Bill Clinton got for his alleged picadillos somehow should never be forgiven because that's horrible. But you have Giuliani, who's pro-choice on abortion, who's on wife number three, who has alienated his children because of his poor decision making apparently in a family setting, and I'm not criticizing him for that, but I think those on the far right have criticized many who aren't on the far right for those very things. But now all of a sudden we're complex voters. I don't know, Owen. I mean, I think this is a sellout, and I think it speaks to the depth of the convictions of these folks. You know, that this is about
power and
control.
You're not
Come on,
these folks. You're talking about Pat Robertson.
Mitt's a big family guy.
But elections are about choices. And if somebody's looking at the election and saying it's going to be Giuliani and Hillary, they have to make a choice. They can't just go pick somebody out of the blue and say, I'd rather have this person.
Well, what happened to Mitt? And what happened? I mean, you've got a whole array of folks there. Fred Thompson, what was that all about?
Well, we're still in the process of choosing a candidate. Yeah. The fact that we have one social conservative out there who I disagree with about many, many things decides to endorse one candidate, I'm not sure that really says something about the entire makeup of the race.
All right, let's go to Dave in Wanakee. Hi, Dave.
Hi. That was a nice intro to my question, and it's regarding Rudy Giuliani. And elections are also about judgment. And this week, Bernie Kerik, who was Giuliani's police commissioner and his personal driver, is indicted for tax evasion. His Rudy Giuliani, South Carolina chairman for his campaign, has been arrested for indicted for cocaine trafficking. And it turned out this week that Salon published a story that says there's a priest employed who is a child molester and is employed by Giuliani partners.
I don't, yeah, you know what, we're going on a very long list of charges against Giuliani that I don't have any news reports on, but I certainly know there are the police commissioner's indictment did occur. So what about that? Will that hurt Giuliani, Owen Robinson?
Of course it's going to hurt him, but, you know, he was a close friend of Giuliani, has been for years. You know, it does, and all these are legitimate political issues. I mean, Giuliani has a incredibly flawed character, and so that has to be taken into account if you're looking at him to decide if you want him to be president of the United States.
So, Owen, you want regulated industry today and an incredibly flawed character from Giuliani, right?
Greg, you seem to be suggesting that I'm a Giuliani supporter.
No, I know you're not.
Yeah. Let's go to the other side of the political aisle. The front runner, or at least according to the national polls, Hillary Clinton, getting some help maybe from husband Bill Clinton when he said that he thought that Hillary was being swift voted over her stand on immigration licenses, driver's licenses for illegal immigrants. You want to comment on that, Peg?
My only thing is, and I haven't taken a position in the Democratic presidential race yet, and I'm still not sure who I'll vote for. And frankly, by the time we get to vote in Wisconsin, it'll probably be a done deal. But that being said, I was surprised because I had first heard the news accounts of what had been said by her and by I hadn't watched the debate. But I first heard the news accounts of what had been said by her and also the news accounts of what he had said in response. And then I actually heard the actual response by Clinton and saw the clip from the debate. And I was amazed that somehow the news reports got as exaggerated as they were based on what was actually said. And I think, it goes toward that oversimplification of complex issues. And in this case, they did that to her. And she's having it done because she's a front runner. I think the bigger question isn't how does this impact Hillary, but how does this impact our conversations we need to have as a nation about illegal immigration, you know, undocumented folks who are here, and how we're going to handle that whole situation.
Yeah. Owen?
You know, I actually was watching that debate when it happened, and it was this wasn't some sort of nuanced position. She was asked specifically about a program that the governor of the state of New York was advocating, and whether or not Hillary, a U.S. senator from that state, supported or did not support that program. It wasn't some sort of, you know, do you in general, in theory, support driver's license for illegals? It was, do you support this program that's taking place in your state? That is a perfectly legitimate question to ask a presidential contender. And frankly, she hemmed and hawed, and the other Democrat contenders at the podiums there went after her. Edwards went after her. Obama went after her. And they're trying to win the nomination. Of course they're going to go after
it. I didn't view it that way, Owen. And the other thing is I think the bigger issue is just the tragedy of politicizing an issue like this in a way that's totally unfair. I mean, right in Wisconsin, right here in our state, when I was attorney general, I was beaten up mightily by you and others, including the current and the incumbent attorney general, for saying this is a federal issue, the federal government has to deal with it. The current attorney general, who criticized my inaction on these issues, has since been quoted in newspapers as saying this is a federal issue, this isn't a state issue. This whole immigration thing is going to be one of those buzz things that where it's the gotcha issue of this election, and it was in the last election as well, and that's tragic because it's an important issue and one we ought to be discussing and not in this gotcha kind of way.
Suggest that we shouldn't politicize, that's the naughty word, this issue is ridiculous. To politicize something only means that we want to talk about it. We want to have our elected leaders represent our views and enact policies that we as the people of the United States of America and the state of Wisconsin agree with. That's what politics is, and that's its purpose.
But
back to this issue with Hillary, and that was the original question of whether she was swift-voted, which seems to be the new McCarthy word of our political era. But to suggest that she was swift-voted by Tim Russert, who is no conservative whatsoever, in a presidential debate when she was asked a specific question about a specific policy from her state, which is a perfectly legitimate issue, is ridiculous. She's trying to play the victim, and it's not working.
Let me bring in some other issues. We're running short on time. The House did this week pass the first federal ban on job discrimination based on sexual orientation. The Employment Non-Discrimination Act was passed by the House. It still has to pass the Senate, but President Bush is expected to veto it, saying that this would trample religious rights, that, say, a Christian bookstore shouldn't have to hire a homosexual. Peg, what do you think?
You know, we've gone through this with all sorts of... I mean, we went through this with race, we went through this with gender, we've gone through this with everything. You know, I think gay and lesbian rights movement is the civil rights movement of this generation, and it's one which we need to address, and we need to address in a way that we're not going to be divisive, but that we're going to be inclusive.
Owen?
I think any business leader who would discriminate on something like that is a moron, frankly.
Yeah.
And in this age of competition and global economies, businesses should be trying to hire the best talent regardless of what they look like or what they do. Because that's what you need to do to compete.
Yeah, so you don't think President Bush should veto this one?
I'm not sure. I'm still debating that issue in my head. I'm not sure that another layer of federal regulation on something that I'm not even really sure is a problem is the right way to go.
Yeah. Moving on to another issue from Mike in Appleton. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. I'd like your guest perspectives on the visit of the German chancellor and to talk about what to do with Iran. And I would beg, depending on the answers, opportunity for a follow-up.
Well, I don't know if we'll have time, Mike. I'm sorry. So I mean, what is it that you want to know?
What their position is, what their thoughts are.
Well, there we go. That's what we'll get. And we had the France's president here, too, talking about that. What do you think, Owen?
Well, Iran is a serious issue, and I think that that's globally recognized, and actually with Queen Elizabeth also mentioning it in her speech. and with the French president, and obviously for us, allowing Iran to have nuclear weapons after they have vocally claimed that they will wipe Israel off the map, and they're sitting right next door to two American theaters with Afghanistan and Iraq, and they're known supporters of terrorist organizations, it cannot happen. I agree with the current policy of using a multi-pronged diplomatic approach at this point, but we need to be prepared to have real answers on it. And I think it's also interesting that if you look out in the political debate in the presidential contest, why more of the candidates aren't taking a position here, because these are the hard decisions that presidents have to make, and for them to sit back and then just want to snipe after the fact is a weakness of leadership.
Okay. I think we should reinstitute the draft, Joy, because then maybe people would think about it more seriously if they realized that everybody would maybe have to serve. I think that, you know, we have become trigger happy when it comes to our foreign policy and the way in which we're dealing with diplomacy. And Iran is an issue. The entire Mideast is an issue. It has been an explosive place for centuries and centuries. But at some point, we have to figure out a way in which we're going to handle all of these things, because we can't take on the world. Owen talked earlier about you know, the biggest corporation in the world now is a Chinese corporation that produces oil or deals with the oil. You know, we've got to deal with China. We have to deal with India. We have to deal with North Korea. We have to deal with Iran. We have to deal with Afghanistan. We have to deal with the issues with Israel and Lebanon. And, you know, the list goes on. And we can't be everywhere being the tough guy on the playground. And at some point, we have to figure out a way in which we're going to coexist in peace and you know, and get people to opt into things like democracy based on it having compelling value.
Yeah, almost out of time. And Mike, sorry, not time for a follow-up, but I want our guests to both comment briefly on what's going on in Pakistan. The Bush administration telling the Pakistani President Musharraf to hold elections as scheduled, and today's news has one of his opponents, Benazir Bhutto, who is going to hold a protest rally today. Government has barricaded her home. Mm-hmm. What are you worried about this, Owen?
Well, that's a big issue to cram into.
I know. But, sorry about that.
Yes, I'm worried about it. Pakistan is a critical area. They have a lot of key supply lines directly to our troops in Afghanistan. They're a nuclear nation. It is a huge issue. The mm-hmm. actions of Musharraf are tyrannical, and he's acting the petty tyrant. And I personally believe that it's time for America to pull our support for him. However, we need to make sure that whoever does end up in charge is not worse.
Yeah. Peg, less than a minute. I'm sorry.
That's a crapshoot. I think I can't say much more than what Owen said. I mean, it's a huge issue, and it's one where we think we need good and careful diplomacy. I hope we'll have that.
And I thank you both very much for being here. Owen and Peg Lautenschlager, thanks a lot.
Always a pleasure, Joy.
Peg Lautenschlager, former Attorney General of Wisconsin, now in private practice with the Madison law firm Lawton & Cates, and Owen Robinson, a blogger for bootsandsabers.com, a columnist for the West Bend Daily News. We thank them both for being our guests today for the Week in Review. Coming up on Monday at this time, I'll be talking with the author of the book, The Secret War on Cancer, The Secret History of the War on Cancer. And hopefully I will not have this cold anymore after the weekend. Thanks to Karen Prager and to Christina Taylor for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.